When you need expert help and advice on issues affecting your business, NFU Cymru, we're here for you.
Farmers Guardian is proud to work alongside the Rock and Roll Farming Podcast. For all the latest news and features from across the ag industry, head to fginsight.com. You'll also find a wide variety of advice pieces to help you and your farming business flourish.
Want to get to know the people who produce the food that you eat? This is the place. Step this way and welcome to Rock and Roll Farming. Rock and Roll Farming is proud to be part of the Farm and Rural Ag Network. For more great agriculture-related podcasts and vlogs, please visit farmruralag.com.
Farm Africa!
Oye!
Uganda!
Oye!
Kanungu!
Oye!
Youth!
Oye!
Women!
Oye!
Coffee!
Oye!
UK!
Oye!
What you've just heard is the reaction of farmers in Kanunga, Uganda, to hearing that Farm Africa's Coffee is Life appeal has launched. Between 8th of February and 8th of May, donations in support of my London Marathon Challenge will go to Farm Africa's Coffee is Life appeal. If you can donate before 8th of May 2019, all public donations to Farm Africa's Coffee is Life appeal will be doubled by the UK government. What a country. Your donation will support Farm Africa projects across Eastern Africa, and the matched funding you unlock from the UK government will directly fund a Farm Africa project that will give women in Kanungu in Western Uganda the opportunity to make a decent living from coffee farming. I'm trying to raise £5,000 to support the appeal, and if you could spare anything at all, we would greatly appreciate it. Just visit justgiving.com/fundraising/William-Evans12, and I will put that link in the show notes. Thank you. Hey everybody, and welcome to Rock and Roll Farming episode 109. I'm your host, Will Evans, and tonight I am heading up to Rippendon in Yorkshire to talk to beef and sheep farmer Rachel Hallos. Rachel, how are you?
I'm all right, Will. How are you?
I'm very, very well. In fact, I'm better than well. I'm great because we're recording this a couple of days after Wales' famous victory over England in the Six Nations, and I haven't stopped smiling since. I don't know about you.
Shut up. Give over. Listen, we've got to share the love. That's
yeah,
what it is.
Exactly.
We've got to share the love.
Well, we do appreciate it.
I knew you would.
So has the sun been shining up there? It's been gorgeous here. Very unseasonable.
It's been absolutely glorious today, Will. It's not often you get days like this in our neck of the woods in February. It's been T-shirt weather. And it just seems a little bit wrong.
I know.
It's going to bite us in the backside, isn't it, somewhere?
You can't help but feel like that, can you? As if we've seen it before too many times, haven't we, as farmers?
Yeah,
we'll enjoy it while it's here. So tell us a bit about the part of the world where you live.
Ooh, right, okay. Well, I would say it's pretty harsh.
Mm-hmm.
If you're right, okay, tell you what, Wuthering Heights.
Yeah.
That's my neck of the woods, but it is that bleak moorland. I'm not painting a very nice picture at all, am I? So I'll tell you what it is. Quite a few people have been to our farm and said, why? And I've gone, I don't know.
So how high up is it?
Well, you know, where we actually live, the farmstead itself, we're about, I think we're about 950,000 foot.
Oh, yeah.
And geez. The farm runs up to 1,300 foot at its highest point.
Does it? Wow. Wow.
Yeah. So we're very good at horizontal range.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Really good at that. Yeah, really good at that. A lot of rough moorland type farm. But actually, do you know what? On a day like today, you just go, wow.
Yeah.
It's pretty damn good. We don't have a flat field on the farm.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, We do very steep valleys where I come from. The only thing in the bottom of our valley is a river. That's it.
Because I'm from Wales, everyone thinks I live on like the top of a mountain as well. But we're only 60 feet above sea level, so I'm a proper softy lowlander, you know, and we're dead flat in the bottom of a valley. So it's hard for me to picture the challenges of farming up there, because it can be a challenge, can't it? Farming at that altitude.
Oh my god! Yeah, it is a challenge. But I think when you're brought up with it and you just get used to it, it's not easy. I'll be honest with you, it's not easy. We're a water catchment farm, so we have two reservoirs at the bottom of the farm, and so it rains a lot.
Yeah,
and didn't last summer, but that's another story. It rains a lot, and. We're clay soil. There's not a lot we can do with it. We've got a large acreage, but to be fair, that large acreage is only there in the summer months, mm-hmm. being moorland.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we are restricted as to what we can do, but you adjust to what you do, don't you?
Of course.
And what you've got.
Of course. So were you born and brought up in that area?
Oh, yeah, I'm a bit sad. I haven't flown very far, to be quite honest. I'm a farmer's daughter, and I was brought up at the top of a hill, with my five siblings, the youngest of six. And, I'm the youngest of six, and there's 10 years between the next one, and by God, do they begrudge it.
Really? Oh, right, you were a proper late hatch then.
Mother's still about, and she still tells me that I was a mistake. Thanks, Mom. Cheers, love you too. But hey, you know.
Yeah, happy accident, I'm sure.
Yeah. Oh, God, she still tells me, 88, and she still tells me, well, for God's sake, Mom, shut up. So, yeah, I was brought up at the top of a hill. We had cattle, we had some sheep, but Dad did a lot of other things as well. Dad did actually a lot of cattle removing for a local company, uh-huh. a local firm it was at the time, before people got their trailers, their IFA trailers, and started dragging their own cattle and sheep about. He used to do a lot of cattle hauling. And literally, that is a stone's throw about a mile and a half away.
Is it?
From where I am now.
Okay.
Yeah, pathetic,
isn't it? Well, it's quite common though, isn't it, in farming? We like where we are, don't we? So.
Yeah, we do like where we are. I keep telling the kids when you meet somebody, sort of like spread the genetic pool. We need some new blood in. Come on.
Yeah, well, there is that.
Yeah, come on, a fresh face or two.
Yeah, some parts of the country more than others. But so how did you meet your husband Stephen?
Oh well, there's a local pub to us, and if you go back many moons ago, local country pubs always used to have a bit of a disco going on.
Yeah.
On a night. Yeah, the good old days, disco. And I was on the last bus to the Beehive, which was quite a synonymous bus that basically came from, took everybody nearer home. Nowadays, they all go away, don't they, later on at night.
Yeah.
When I was younger, everybody made it nearer home so they could walk home. And we met on the last bus to the Beehive, and it's just, that's as simple as that. God, no, donkeys years ago now.
Very romantic.
Oh, well, not really, yeah. I think there was a comment of, look at them thick ox as I walked down the bus. Yeah, and that I didn't take much wooing quite clearly, did I?
Okay, so was Stephen, he was a local farmer though as well?
Yeah, so okay. His mum and dad, so Beeston Hall where we are, it was his parents' farm, his family farm, if you like.
Yeah.
So he was dairying, he was milking cows at the time. And we eventually got together, got married, and we're still here. We're still married.
Tell us about the farm as it was then when you guys moved in and took it on.
Right, so, well, when I married Stephen, Stephen's family was milking cows, and like in our neck of the woods in the South Pennines, and particularly in our area in Calderdale, there was a lot of mills. In fact, in our valley alone, there was about 42 mills.
Wow.
So a lot of farmers, even though we're hill farms, used to have 40, 50, 60 cows, milk them, bottle it, deliver it.
Yeah, okay.
I guess that, you know, that's what used to go on in our neck of the woods. And that's what they were doing, you know, basically milking the cows, pasteurizing it, and or, you know, green top, and delivering it in locally. That started tailing off in the 90s.
Yeah.
People started doing the different types of shopping, you know, buying the milk from the supermarket and things. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, there's been quite a lot of tragedy in Stephen's life. Lost a brother, lost his mum, and then he lost his dad. And I always try to be really respectful of my in-laws, my, you know, and my husband's family, but it showed. They've been through a lot of bad times.
Yeah.
And the farm showed that.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that's where the lines get a little bit blurred when it comes to farming, because it is your home.
Yeah.
It is family.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, oh, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's quite unique in that regard, farming, isn't it? It's
yeah, it is, and Stephen and I, we took on the farm. Stephen lost his father, and a few years later on, his brother basically left the business, and it was Stephen left behind. And I was working at the time; both kids were young, and I was working in the village. And basically came home one day and went, I don't know what to do. And what do we do? We're tenant farmers. So we didn't have a lot of options, to be quite honest with. It was fight it out, get us head around this. What can we do? Or we walked away with nothing and started afresh.
Yeah.
And sometimes when you come to a crossroads in life like that, it can go one way or the other. And with Stephen and I, it's I'd like to think it brought out the best in us.
Yeah.
And, you know, we made some difficult choices, and yeah, we didn't have a penny to rub together, and but we had a home.
Yeah.
And we had tenants there.
Yeah. So I suppose it still must have been a difficult decision to go out of dairy, though, I guess, was it?
For me, no.
No.
I'm a little bit of a spreadsheet queen. The spreadsheet was going constantly. Stephen's heart was, I've done this since I was 15.
Yeah, okay.
What will we do? What else can we do?
Yeah, yeah.
And I respected that. And eventually, you know, the milk price was going down. People were taking less and less doorstep delivery. You know, the reality dawned that this is not working.
Yeah.
So, for me, like I say, it wasn't a difficult decision. For Stephen, a whole lot harder. And the day the tanker came into the yard for the very last time was a bit of a killer for him, to be quite honest.
Yeah.
You know, well, a hell of a killer, because I think it was just not just his emotion. He was going back to his parents.
Yeah, yeah.
And the dream that they'd built, if you like. And I think, you know, reading between the lines, and we have talked about it, he felt as if he was not letting them down as such, but maybe, I don't know, it's a difficult one, maybe not continuing what they wanted, if you like.
Yeah, no, I do, and as an ex-dairy farmer myself, I do understand that. It's,
yeah.
We carry these things, don't we, in farming? It's carry these things with us from the previous generation.
Yeah, we do. And people don't often get that element of it. And I often say to people now, we know, when they're going about with farmers, and, you know, you and I know, you've done stuff on it as well. There's a lot of farmers in a lot of bad places now, financially, but mentally is the worst one for me that we need to get a handle on. And I think it preys a lot on your mind.
Yeah, yeah.
The whole thing.
I think
it does. The whole thing. It's a, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So milking, we finished. I felt relief. Stephen not so, he's the same.
Yeah.
And then it was like, okay, that milk check was great when it came every month. What are we going to replace it with?
Yeah. Yeah, suddenly your cash flow doesn't look so good.
Yeah, to be fair, it wasn't looking particularly good beforehand, yeah. But all of a sudden, oh dear.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we just banged heads together. And just bear in mind that all this was happening at the same time that Foot and Mouth hit.
Yeah, okay.
You know, and it didn't get us. But obviously, no trading.
Yeah.
We didn't have enough feed. Yeah. They were interesting times, Will.
Yeah.
Interesting times.
Yeah. So how did you come to start with the Solaire cattle?
So we were doing all these different sort of things to try and make some money. I ended up rearing black and white calves. We started buying a few black and white calves ourselves. And then started thinking about what we're going to do, we need suckler cows, but what sort of suckler cows do we need? Now, I cannot emphasise how rough our ground is.
Mm.
So we were going to have to be looking at some sort of native belted Galloway, Highlandy, Angus at a push.
Yeah.
And I kept on thinking, I'm never going to sell these things. You know, I don't wish to be disrespectful to any other breed of those animals, but it's very niche market.
Yeah, yeah.
And at that time, I'm thinking, where are we going to go with these cattle to sell them? And then, it's a really random story. I'm there making Sunday dinner, one Sunday, and Countryfire was on. And they were doing a piece on woodchip corrals.
Mm.
And we didn't have any buildings at the time. Everything was falling apart. And I sort of ears pricked up, looked at these woodchip corrals. Could we do that? I don't know. Carried on making Sunday dinner. Following week, ran Countryfile up, like you do. and one of these, if you want to find something out, just keep digging.
Yeah.
Ran Countryfile up and said, you did a piece on woodchip corral. Can you tell me any more about it? And they just said, oh, it's FAI at Oxford. Okay. We're there then.
Okay.
Oh, okay. We got a number for him. We can't really do that. Oh, go on. They did. Ran them up. Again, like you do.
Yeah.
Somehow managed to get to the right person, and these people came and called in on us on the way to another farm somewhere that they were doing some research work on.
Yeah.
And we had some Angus crosses right up on the tops, and I was showing them around the farm and things, and they actually turned around and just said, you know what you need? And I went, what's that then? You want some soy cows? And I went, what? And they just said, oh, we've got some on our farm, and one of our directors has got some on his farm in North Yorkshire. Oh, yeah. So, okay. It was he then. So, again, another telephone number, rang him up, and Stephen and I went to this farm up in North Yorkshire. And we went into this field and we just saw these big, red, hairy cows. And to be quite honest, just fell in love with them.
Yeah. Fantastic.
As random as that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bought a few in calf when we calved at Foot. As we were selling the dairy cows, as they calved, we were selling them bit by bit and just started replacing them as and when we could afford.
Mm.
And that's literally how we started.
You've grown it up from there. How many have you got now?
We reduced number slightly because of the drought last year. Needs must and all the rest of it. But we're just carving about 85 at the moment.
Yeah, okay. So are you coming up to calving now?
We won't start calving until the end of April.
Okay.
What we do is we have two calving herds. We have a spring and an autumn. There's a reason behind that. But the spring calvers won't start calving until end of April, and we kick them out and let them calve outside.
Yeah, okay. And most of them calve on their own.
God, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually can't remember the last time.
Fantastic.
We intervened.
Yeah.
At all.
Yeah. Oh, it's obviously going to suit your farm then very well, isn't it?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Mm. It suits our farm. We do a lot of remote grazing. The autumn calvers actually go up onto the moorland at the end of April, and we don't see them again till September.
Yeah.
We do. We do look. We're not that bad. We do actually go look. There are times when we will actually sit around the kitchen table and say, "Are anybody seeing cows somewhere?" And we'll go, "No, I am." Right, we better go looking for them then.
Yeah.
Because it's like 585 hectares of moorland. Yeah. It could be anywhere.
Yeah.
so we do remote graze. We boot the autumn calvers out up onto the moor, and they don't come back near a home until September time. And they don't come in, they just come near a home and calve outside.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of a rotation that goes on.
Good. Okay. Now, I know you are passionate about the natural environment on your farm. What kind of work are you doing in that area, and how did you start with it?
Do you want the honest truth, Will?
Always want the honest truth.
Honest truth. It's all about the money. It was all about the money.
Yeah.
I'm really glad
you've said that, because I've tried to sort of make that point a few times with these environment schemes. We all want to do it, but it's got to pay, isn't it? And it's simple as that.
It's got to pay. Mm. It's got to pay. And as I've already said, we were not in a good place financially when we first took the farm on. Mm-hmm. And again, it was one of those random discussions with somebody that made me make a phone call that ended up with somebody sat around my kitchen table. That ended up with us in 2003 going into the original, not the version we've got now, that doesn't really exist, the original Countryside Stewardship Scheme. And that to us was the first time that our farm had some sort of guaranteed income.
Yeah.
And that just opened a whole different set of doors for us. Because the first time our bank manager went, "Yeah, I'm with you. I see where you're coming from. I see what you're doing. I can see what's going to be coming in. Where do we go from here? Not where do you go from here? Where do we go from here?" And that changed everything for us.
Yeah.
So the money, the contract, the payment of that money is vital. For us, we do heather regeneration on the moorland, hence the autumn calving cows. That's their little job.
Yeah.
We have traditional hay meadows. We protect the imbyland for your waders, your curlews, your pewits, as we call them our way, your lapwings. And then we have a little brown bird that is very important that's called the twite.
That's right, yeah. I messaged you, yeah. I Google stalked you and saw about that. Yeah, that sounds really cool. I'd never heard of a twite before, I must admit.
Nobody has. But they're a little tiny brown bird that is very rare.
Yeah.
And God bless the twite. And it tends to like it at our place. It likes it at our place, and it likes to spend its time here in summer. And that has meant that what we do is we manage our hay meadows to provide the feeding ground to those birds.
Yeah.
Because they only eat seeds, so they're quite particular.
Have you seen a dramatic increase in birds and wildlife in general since you started with the environmental schemes?
We have to a degree. Do you know what my little bugbear in all this is? I often turn around and say, "What are you doing about the winter habitat for these birds?"
Yeah.
And sometimes you draw a bit of a blank.
Mm.
And it's that joined up thinking. So we can be doing as much as we possibly can for the birds on our farm for the time that they're on our farm. But what's happening afterwards?
Yeah.
When they go away. So, I mean, for us, the curlews, the lapwings, another month and we'll be hearing them singing. We haven't heard them yet, and I actually don't want to hear them yet because it's a little bit too soon.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we have seen a difference. And what we've also seen on the moorland with the heather regeneration is we have seen the heather start growing back, which there'll be a lot of farmers that actually say, "What the hell do you want heather for?"
Mm.
Well, our moorland has been damaged over the years by pollution.
Yeah.
If you imagine, we're 20 miles from Manchester, 20 miles from Leeds.
Mm.
Now, prevailing wind is from the west. So if you imagine during the Industrial Revolution,
yeah,
all those mills,
of course, yeah,
you know, Liverpool, Manchester, all that area there, all that pollution used to come up, rise, hit the South Pennines, hit our hill in effect, rain.
Mm.
And a lot of pollution has damaged the moorlands, an awful lot.
Yeah.
And so we ended up with just like a millennium moorland. That's your purple moor grass that goes white in winter and blows away and covers all your fences.
Yeah.
That sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And we've noticed now that as time's gone on, there is heather there now. So we have seen differences. We have seen differences on the heather moorland. We have seen differences with the bird population. But I would like to see a little bit more joined up thinking, because I think if that was the case and we knew what was going on with the winter habitat, I think there would be an increase everywhere then.
Mm.
If that makes any sense?
It does. Yeah, it does. But it's all in the communication with these organisations, isn't it? But
Well, communication is everything, is it not?
Yeah, it is. It is.
People, collaboration.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
So you've recently diversified as well into a holiday let on the farm.
Oh my God.
That must have been a big decision.
Oh, well, yeah. We are tenant farmers.
Mm-hmm.
And the farmhouse itself, it's beautiful. We are very, very fortunate to have the tenancy of Beeston Hall. It was built in the 1600s.
Wow.
There's quite a lot of this type of property around by us. It was built by a wealthy mill owner.
Yeah.
That made his money out of wool.
Yeah, okay.
Like a lot of properties around by us is.
Yes.
Yeah, and we were very, very fortunate, again, right place, right time, right phone call, to buy a section of the farmhouse that had been let by our landlord on a private basis to somebody else.
Okay.
And, that was one of those, that was another one of those phone calls when I put the phone down and went, oh, shit. Even I've done something. And he just looks at me and goes, oh, Christ. And basically we renovated this house, and we'd never been in it when we bought it, but we would have been crazy not to have bought it, if you get what I mean.
Yeah, of course.
We renovated it, and it was, nobody'd less than there. An old couple had lived in it for 60 years,
right,
and their life was in it.
Right, okay.
It was one of those, it was like one of those Channel 4 dispatchers programs where you see people that have just kept everything for their entire life.
Right, okay.
it was interesting. We renovated the cottage, rented it out privately for a number of years, and then last summer, a friend of ours just said, this would make a cracking holiday cottage. And I just went, who'd want to come here? And then I actually looked and put different eyes with it.
Yeah.
Sometimes you don't realise what you've got there.
No, you don't. No, absolutely.
And, I had this is what we're going to do. And everybody groans at me again. Right, okay. And I'm going, no, this is going to work really well. Honestly, this is going to work. And, oh, my God. Has it worked? Yeah, it has.
Fantastic.
So I'm a dab hand at cleaning now.
How long have you been up and running with it? When did your first guests come in?
First guest came the 6th of December.
Wow.
And it hasn't been empty yet.
Wow, okay.
It's bonkers.
Yeah.
It's bonkers.
So has it been a steep learning curve? Has it just come naturally?
I don't know. A lot more work than I anticipated.
Yeah.
But you don't get anything for nothing, do you?
No, of course not, no.
As simple as that.
No, anything worthwhile.
I just class it as a way of, if it can draw an income that allows us to get through sticky periods, which I think we're all likely to go through in the near future, then then it's got to, you've got to try it, haven't you?
Absolutely.
You've got to try and mitigate what's going on, any volatility, what's going on. And that's why we've done it. And my God, what a good decision. And then you sit there thinking, duh, why didn't they do this?
Yeah, of course. Of course you do. So how did your involvement with the National Farmers Union begin? When did you first get involved with them?
Skirted around the edges for quite a while, really, and be all quiet. I like to know what's going on, Wilson. I didn't know you that way. Can you tell? And then a few local people have been badgering me to get involved and a branch level. And the timing wasn't right. The kids were young. I was doing stuff with the children, and we were still getting us trying. Well, I think you're always trying to get yourself organised in your own business, aren't you? That's what you do.
Yeah.
And then I thought, what will it be? About 3 years ago now, I got really heavily involved and ended up being county chair. I just want farmers to do okay.
Yeah.
That's what I want.
Yeah.
And I look around and I just want to help farmers that, you know, life's not simple anymore, is it? Life is not simple anymore.
No.
Yeah.
It's changing quickly, isn't it? There's a lot of big changes for a lot of people, isn't there?
Yeah.
It can be daunting for people, can't it?
It can be a scary place to be in.
It can.
And I think because we went through and have gone through what we did, and I look back and I think, well, we could have crashed and burned, and somehow we did it. And I'm all about the people. I just want to try and get other people to understand that if you talk to people and if you work with other people, there's a way through it.
Yeah.
You see what I mean? It's that sort of collaboration. And I think that's why I really wanted to get involved with the NFU, because I wanted to find out what was going on. How could I help? Could I make things better for the farmers? Just even if it was just by making a few, you know, points of view pretty clear from personal experience, or experience of the farmers in my area, and I think it's important. I think it's important.
Yeah,
I'm proud of what we do.
Yeah, yeah. Well, no, exactly. I think that really comes across. I mean, and you won an award recently for your outstanding contribution as well. Which was you must have been. I know you'll be all embarrassed for that, me mentioning that. But
I am.
But it's nice, though, isn't it? It's nice for you and your family.
It is nice, and it's nice to be recognised. But there's a hell of a lot of the farmers doing a hell of a lot of the good as well. But I can't deny it. I do appreciate that acknowledgement. I do, but I'm not really into that.
No.
Squirmy.
Yeah, I can tell.
Yeah, I get embarrassed by it.
Yeah. No, I can tell, but it's just a cool thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's nice. Yeah, it's nice. Recognized.
Yeah, it's something you've worked very hard to highlight during your time as chairman is the problem of rural crime. Seems like the rapidly escalating problem of rural crime. I mean, you've worked a lot with the police on this, haven't you?
I am so fortunate that within the NFU we have a county advisor that's sort of like assigned to your area as well, your county as well.
Yeah.
And the person that I've got is a lady called Amy, and she's just superb. And the only way I can describe Amy is that she's a bit like a terrier. And that when she's got something, she will not let it go.
Yeah.
And I'd like to think. Well, I think we do. We get on so well, and once we set our mind to something, and we decided rural crime, we're sick of this. We're sick of hearing about it. We're sick of things not being done about it. And we decided one day, let's do it. Let's go for it. If we're going to do something, let's go for rural crime. Let's nail it. And we've had a gazillion meetings with various police crime commissioners and police forces, and yeah, I think we've got some traction. I think we've got some traction in our area, and I would like to think that we are getting some sort of results now. You know, we had one woman, God bless her. Her sheep was being chased by a damn dog, and she was told by the police it wasn't a crime.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, no, it is. It is.
Yeah.
So what we're doing now, we're pulling together information so that the 101 call centre can actually cross-reference it. So when they get somebody that rings up and says, my sheep have been attacked by a dog chasing them, they can go tap, tap, tap away at a database, and it goes, yeah, that's a crime.
Yeah.
We'll sort it.
A thing we've seen a big increase in is fly tipping incidents. I know Michael Gove specifically mentioned this in his speech last week at the conference, and you've had some experience of that as well, haven't you?
Oh, my God, yeah. It's still there. Down the line, it's still there. Jeez. Yeah, it's still there. So we're in a really strange situation on our farm that if you imagine a group of fields, and then in the middle of these fields is a barn, and a track up to the barn. And that barn was sold off by our landlord years and years ago, and it's been renovated twice now. He's no longer there, and people have decided to use it to commercially fly tip.
Right.
So we're in a really strange position because the land that the fly tipping is going on is not owned by ourselves or our landlord.
Okay.
But because it's surrounded by our fields are full of it.
Right.
Because obviously the wind
it's just,
blows it.
Yeah.
So we just spend, you know... Well, we'll just have every now and again, we'll have a set to, and we'll go and clear a field up. And you're just basically fetching a trail load of gubbins back down with you. And it's just awful, awful. So, I mean, it's still there. It's still going on. We can't block access legally. We have tried, but they cut the gates. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm still pursuing it. I'm still trying to get somebody to acknowledge it, respond to it. I don't know who owns the property anymore. We've done land registry searches, and there's nobody to write to. There's nobody to get a hold of. And it's just one of those really sticky things. And then the other day, we've just managed to get hold of another area of land, and we're just fencing it. And that's all we ever seem to do here is fence fields. But we're just fencing it. And my son had been up to feed the sheep, and he came down the road, and he just says, oh, there you go, Mum. And he's got his phone out, and oh, there's a nice gateway that we've just put in, and a load of asbestos roofing sheet. Cheers, guys. Cheers, guys.
Right.
So, yeah, the joy's off. The joy's off. And I'm not sure where you go with it, actually.
Mm.
You know, I'm not sure.
No.
It frustrates me.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we'll have to hope that something comes out of Gove's acknowledgement of the problem. And the problem is that they say all the right things, don't they? But it takes a long while for action to happen, doesn't it? But
let's not talk about Mr. Gove and his nice words.
He throws you in
like you're around a nice warm fireside with a really good glass of port.
He does.
And then the following morning you realise he's just talked at you again, don't he?
Yes, we'll change this subject to something much more exciting.
You know what? If he delivers on what he says, then wow.
Yeah. Well, yes.
Wow.
Reminds me of a scene. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll change the subject to something much more exciting.
Yeah.
As listeners will know, I'm running the London Marathon this year for the Amazing Farm Africa, and you have been out to Kenya with them to do some work out there. How did that happen?
I've talked quite a bit about random phone calls. This is one of them. I was driving to a meeting one morning. It was about 8 o'clock in the morning, 10 to 8 in the morning, and the phone goes whilst I'm driving along on the old good old Bluetooth. And it was Adam Bedford. Adam Bedford is the regional director for the North East.
Yes.
And in Adam's dulcet West Yorkshire tones, he was brought up not far from where I am, actually. All right, Rich. Yeah, I'm all right, Adam. What are you doing at back end? I have no idea. Why? What am I doing at back end, Adam? Now, in our terminology, back end means autumn time.
Yeah.
So, just to, so nobody's confused by that term.
I'm glad you clarified that for overseas listeners.
Yeah, I thought I ought to. And I've got very used to these phone calls of what are you doing on such and such a day? I don't know why. What am I doing? Tell me what am I doing?
Yeah.
Anyway, so I just turned around and said, why? What am I doing this time? Fancy going to Africa? What? It was like, what? And I just went, for any particular reason at all? And he just went, well, he says, I'm pulling together a group of people to go and see some Farm Africa projects. And he just says, and I just think you'd get a lot out of it. And I think you could bring a lot to it. And what do you reckon? And I have to say, Will, I'm a big believer in, we have family meetings around the kitchen table in my kitchen. But I have to say, it took me all of about 3 seconds to say, yeah, go on then.
Yeah.
I'm just a farmer from a hill farm. When was I ever going to get asked that sort of thing?
Yeah.
You know, how lucky am I to be asked if I want to get involved in something like that? So there's no way I was going to say no.
No.
And it was a privilege to actually go and just see what the work they're doing out there. So we ended up in Kenya.
So what was the experience like when you got there? Describe it for us. Because, you know, it's a long way from home, isn't it?
Oh, my God. I've never done a long haul flight, for God's sake. That was an experience in itself anyway.
Yeah.
I can't explain, Will. It completely took my breath away. We went to Kenya and we went to look at two projects. We were there for a week and it was hard graft. They were long days, a lot of travelling. But oh my God, Will, what they are doing out there is just phenomenal. I can't describe how amazing it is. What Farm Africa are doing is they are not giving people money. Mm-hmm. What they are doing is educating them.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, have they got a thirst for education.
Mm-hmm.
The Kenyans just want to learn. They want to know everything. They want to know how to do it better. They want to know how to make things work. And that just blows you away.
Yeah.
You know, in this country, I'm going to be bold here. I'm going to be really bold here and people can shout at me afterwards. And I would like to say that sometimes we think we know it all.
Yeah.
Wow. You've got to go out there and to listen to them and have conversations with these people who have literally got nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say nothing, I mean nothing. And Farm Africa's gone in and, as I said, they don't give them money. They basically explain to them how to grow different crops, how to do crop rotations, how to market their crops, how to work with their neighbours so that they are not all producing the same thing at the same time and therefore flooding the market and devaluing it.
Yeah.
And the difference it's made, Will, is just amazing. It is the, you know, it blew me away from the moment we got there. Obviously, it's a shock to the system.
Yeah, I can imagine.
The living conditions, how the country is itself. It's a beautiful country. The beautiful people. But it is a shock. We've been through hard times on our farm. We have had hard times. There's no denying that. But this is nothing. What we went through was nothing.
Mm.
What these people are going through, have gone through, and are trying the damnedest to come out the other side of. And I have utmost respect for what they're doing. Utmost respect.
Absolutely. So Adam said to you that he thought you would get a lot out of it. What do you think you did get out of it? What did you take home from the experience?
For me, oh my God, it's difficult to actually put a point on what I took away from it. It made me really evaluate the possibilities that we all have there for us. We don't have to go looking for things, or we don't have to look that hard if we have to look, if you get what I mean.
Yeah.
You know, information is there readily available for us. There is help readily available for us. And I know sometimes it's hard to ask for help. I know that, and I appreciate that. But it's there. And I think it made me realise that we, as a nation, and actually as an industry, are really fortunate.
Yeah.
People may disagree with that, and I respect that, but we are. And I think that's what it did for me. And actually, it made me really evaluate what I want out of my life.
Yeah.
And what I've got as a, you know, family. I come from a big family. We don't live in each other's pockets, but we all do things together. We, you know, we're a family. And then my own family, my, you know, my husband and my children, it really made me value that.
Yeah.
And what we can achieve together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think that's for me, that's what I took away from it.
Yeah.
In all honesty. So, you know, the selfish point of view.
I mean, one of the things I love about Farm Africa, and one of the reasons I wanted to get involved with them is that feeling that you're supporting fellow farmers, because wherever we are in the world, we've got something in common with other farmers, haven't we? And we can appreciate their struggles.
We've got everything in common with them. If you imagine Kenya, I suppose, is like, farming was here 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's more a subsistence type of farming.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we're talking farmers in Kenya, we're not talking farmers that have got like 30, 40, 50 acres. They've got half. They've got half an acre. And they all used to grow maize. Because that's what you grow. Because that's what you grow. Okay?
Yeah.
And guess what? Everybody grew the maize, got one crop a year. It was all ready at the same time of year. So they all took it to the market, and therefore it wasn't worth a lot of money because they had a burst of it.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, with Farm Africa's education, they're growing different crops, which is educating them. And it's also bringing them an income, and it's actually a good income for them, you know, and which means that they can then progress again, and their children, the children are being educated now. They can put shoes on the children's feet, for God's sake.
Yeah.
No, it's the basics.
Yeah.
It is the basics, Will.
Mm. Yeah.
And you know, a few people have said to me, well, shouldn't we be helping farmers at home rather than those in Farm Africa, in Kenya?
Mm-hmm.
I've struggled with that a little bit, I'll be honest with you. And fair enough to a degree, but do we not have a moral responsibility to help others? And I would like to think that we would automatically help the farmers that we've got at home.
Yeah.
But I think we've also got moral responsibility to help other people in our industry, wherever they are in the world.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more.
I just think we have. Sometimes we think we haven't got a lot.
Mm-hmm.
No, we have.
Yeah, yeah.
They really haven't got a lot. They really haven't got a lot.
Yeah. So do you think if you got the chance, you'd go out there again?
Oh, my God, yeah. Absolutely. Drop of a hat. Absolutely will. Oh, my God. I'm already trying to think how I'm going to do this.
Yeah, yeah.
Because what you've got to remember... Well, what you've got to remember is that it takes a lot of time to pick people for these projects.
Sure, yeah.
And this is valuable time.
Mm.
It's valuable time to the Farm Africa, you know, the people that are working for Farm Africa out there, who are the best set of people, honestly. They're amazing. They're the best set of people. I would love to go back there. I would love to talk to the ladies and the men that I met out there. And oh my God, I'd be there like a shot.
Yeah. And would you encourage other people to get involved and help in any way they can?
Absolutely. Yeah. In any way at all. Yeah. I mean, the easiest way, I mean, I'm not an absolute nut job. You may think I am, but unlike you and Adam and Minette, yeah, and Stuart, who are running the marathon, you are the nut jobs in all this.
Yeah.
But I completely, I bow down to what you are doing, what you are putting yourself through. But, you know, to somebody just to donate, it doesn't matter how small that donation is.
Yeah.
To Farm Africa by supporting you guys doing the marathon, and which in turn is supporting Farm Africa. I think, God, it is so well spent, is that money?
Yeah. You know,
tenner, five, 20 quid, more, whatever you want, just a little bit.
Yeah.
Everybody gave a little bit, it would make such a difference, Will.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's amazing. When you talk to her, there was one woman in particular, and she could, because of Farm Africa, she could actually pay wages to the other women in her community to help her plant, weed, sow, harvest what she was growing under Farm Africa's, not instruction, for them actually explaining to her how to do it properly.
Hmm.
And her children were going to school now. Her three daughters were going to school. And every single one of those women in those fields were earning a salary, which meant that they in turn could feed their children and their children could go to school.
Yeah. Yeah, when you explain education. It like that, it's...
Well, education is everything.
Exactly.
Education is everything.
Mm.
And, you know, it just makes such a big, big difference. And it's not just the individual. It makes a massive difference to the community as a whole.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. So, yeah, once again, for people listening, I don't ask much of you guys, but if you do enjoy listening to the podcast, a few quid thrown Farm Africa's way would make a world of difference to not only to my London Marathon training motivation, but more importantly to farmers in East Africa's lives. And I'll put the Just Giving link in the show notes for this episode. Okay, Rachel, the hour's flown by, so I'm going to finish these with the five traditional hard-hitting questions, if you're ready.
Oh, go on then. Go on.
What's your all-time favourite song?
Oh, my God, that's got to be ELO. ELO, oh, crikey, what the hell have you got? I'm useless with names. Right, okay. I am terrible. Oh, my God, Mr. Blue Sky.
Mr. Blue Sky, yeah, okay.
Yeah, good memories of Mr. Blue Sky. Good centre parts with the kids all singing at the top of our voices.
Great choice. So if you're born and brought up in Yorkshire, if you were banished from there, where else would you choose to live?
Oh, I think if they'd have me, and I think I'd get away with it, I think I'd wing it up there. I think I'd go to Scotland.
Yeah.
Is that wrong to say that?
No, I think that's probably where I'd choose as well if I was banished from Wales. So,
I think they might let me in. I'm not sure.
So what tool, gadget or piece of equipment could you not manage without, do you think?
Oh, I'm going to be a shocker now and say my phone.
I think it is kind of the answer now, isn't it? I think everyone probably say the same. Hate themselves for it as well.
I know, it's awful, but it is like an extent. Everything's on it. Everything's on my phone, and if I lost it, I would be a pain in the backside.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Okay, so if you could download a skill or a talent directly to your brain, so like mine would be playing the piano. I'd love to just instantly play the piano. What would you choose?
Do you know what it would be to be able to remember things? I'm a shocker. I'm crap. I need a photographic memory. I would. If I had a photographic memory, oh my God.
Yeah.
I'm a shocker.
That's a very good answer. Very good answer. Okay, then. And lastly, if you had to recommend a farmer or someone involved in agriculture to follow on social media, who would it be?
Well, right, okay. There's a number of ones that I follow on Twitter, actually. But the one I really enjoy following is a lady that you introduced me to actually through one of your podcasts, and that's Gillian over in Australia. She's going to station
mum. Isn't she a star?
Oh my god, I want to be with that woman. I seriously, I want to stay outside her house.
Yeah.
On an oil drum or whatever, I don't give a damn. I want to be with that woman because some of the things she comes out with, I think I'm with you.
She's a legend, isn't she?
She's an absolute legend, but she knows what she's on about.
Yeah.
And she just, to me, I think it's good to follow people in this country, and God, I learned so much from other people actually as well. But every now and again, you have to dip into a different world.
Yeah.
And she's doing what we do, but on a completely different scale, in a completely different environment, and it does you good to actually understand that. But she's a legend.
Yeah, well, that's a great answer. Yeah, and if she's listening, hello, Gillian. Yeah, great answer. Right then, Rachel, it's been fantastic to speak to you tonight. I'm really glad that we got to meet up last week at the NFU conference, and hopefully we'll catch up with you again soon.
Hope so.
And to everyone at home, thanks for listening, and hope to see you next time. I've been Will Evans, this has been Rock and Roll Farming. Thank you and good night.